This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 259 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Well, I'm cranky, Bruce.
Oh, why?
I'm cranky.
Why are you cranky?
And I'm cranky at one of our listeners very specifically.
Oh. Do I dare ask which one?
I said I was going to back off on the personal insults of our listeners, but Dave Clark from Tasmania, your time has come.
Oh, okay. What's he done?
Well, he sent through earlier in the week, some links, some stuff for us to talk about in the show.
Yeah.
And he had the nerve, the gall, to say, here's some stuff for some, he might want to use as episode fillers. Fillers! Fillers, Bruce, fillers! Like, we're just trying to fluff out this stuff. This hour we talk about with stuff we find on the internet and talk about it. That's fillers. Yeah, nothing but the world's best. We search the entire interweb for nothing but the best photographic content. It's called it fillers.
It suggests that we don't have enough content to make this show interesting.
Exactly. So I'd like to say goodnight now because obviously I think we have the 60. We should make it the 60-second podcast. Yeah. By the time we've said the hellos, the goodbyes, and the what? Oh, done. Finished. Short and sweet.
Excellent.
You know what they'll say? Always leave them wanting more.
That's right.
That's what they say. Or in this case, leave them wanting something. Yeah, anyway, got your day for sending stuff through. We do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
just keep the personal commentary to yourself. So how's your week been, my friend?
Pretty good.
You say that with some... Oh, look, has it been a week? Did I do anything this week?
Some interesting stuff happening in my professional career as an audio engineer, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. But exactly. So
now you tell the listeners I've got some socks to fold.
Well, one thing that I have come across.
You know you want to.
That's okay. That's okay. Those who want to know can find out. But last week I was talking about how excited I was about the specs of the Sony A7S.
Yes.
And I also mentioned my skepticism at the absence of any examples of video footage shot at the higher ISOs.
Yes.
Well, it is.
Or any still photos for that matter of any use.
Actually, that's a good point. I don't think I've seen any stills from it yet. I've only seen video footage.
Which on a photography podcast is probably just marginally more valuable.
Yeah. But through the week, I came across another video. This would be the third video. And I don't know if this was around at the time or if it came out after we had recorded, but I didn't find this third one until after we'd recorded. And it does actually show a guy on a very dark beach at nighttime smoking some fish, which can be completely
taken. I've tried that in the past, Bruce, and they're really hard to light.
And they taste funny when they stick the tail in.
I've gone through about three lighters just getting things to light up.
So anyway, there is some video footage where they do actually take the ISO right up to the 409,000.
From 1600.
From 1600. And they keep the 1600 ISO footage in a small thumbnail in the corner as they then increase the ISO rating further.
It's very cool. I got to say, it is amazing to watch.
It is.
Swear you're watching the daybreak, the light builds in the shots. It just gets lighter and lighter and lighter.
Yeah. It's hard to tell because it's posted on YouTube. It's hard to know where the camera falls apart or where it's just crappy YouTube encoding. Yeah. But to my eye, based on what I saw, up to, the 102,000 or whatever it is, the maximum native ISO of the camera, the video looked really good.
It did. There's some sort of weird sort of artifacts going on with the smoke as it got higher, but from what I could see in my computer, everything else was,
but like I said, it's hard to know if that's the camera or if that's YouTube.
But being able to shoot anything in those conditions and see anything.
Yeah.
Fantastic, you know.
It's phenomenal, particularly when you see the 1600 ISO footage running in the background all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
When it's pitch black, absolutely. So I mean, as I was saying, when I teach photography, because that's what I do, Bruce. teach photography is, yeah, give me any image over no image.
Yeah.
Any day of the week.
Yep.
Yeah, and I always pull up a photo of my daughter Grace at 1 minute old. Shot at 6400 ISO because she was 4:15 in the morning. It was pitch black.
Yeah.
A really, really dark room. And there's this photo of her at 1 minute old.
Wow.
And the first photo taken in her life. And it's like, well, yeah, I had to use 6400. Nothing else would have worked. You know, that or higher was then going to get the shot. And you know, she turns three on Friday. Hard to believe.
Yep.
No, I lie because you know, I'm being crapped at. She turns three on Saturday. but I don't remember what she looks like at 1 minute old. I don't remember the first week, the first month, the first 2¾ years, to be honest. What did I do last week? But that's it. Without the image, I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah. So whatever it takes, you know, if 409,800 ISO looks a bit crappy, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Give me that every day of the week. So, I know we'll all pixel peep and pick at the pieces, but if you can shoot something in a situation where that was never possible before and capture something that was never been able to be done before, hey,
yep.
I don't care if it's noisy.
And the thing is, the people who were taking photos 100 years ago in the, you know, the really early
back
days.
Back in the 1900s,
like the really early days of photography, never in their wildest dreams would they have ever imagined something like a personal computer and software like Photoshop.
Yeah.
Right,
especially
that was just
the video, especially the video guys. They would have had very little thought about that.
But my point is, you've got no idea where the technology's going to go. So, as you say, you know, noisy image is better than no image. And to back that up, I would say, yeah, let's shoot at the noisiest, highest ISO settings, if that's what it takes to get the image, because somewhere down the track, some technology is going to come along that's going to make that stuff usable.
Maybe, yeah. My teaching philosophy is always as low as possible and as high as necessary.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's about the only thing it can be. But I also say when I'm teaching, and I really find ISO is the hardest thing to teach.
Right.
But for newbies to really grasp. But I would say that now, this issue of noise, we probably won't be having this discussion in 5 years.
No.
10 years. There, this whole thing, what, you had noise in your photos at only 500,000 ISO? What? Yeah. it's getting to that point because, hey, you know, I've got a shot I took recently when I was in India at 12,800.
Yep.
It's clear as a bell.
Wow.
And it's like, well, that's just not possible 2 years ago.
No.
Yeah, that just would not have worked. And here we are, bang, there's an image at 11 o'clock at night in an incredibly dark alley with kids being lit up only by a piece of burning paper.
Yeah, wow.
You know, and yeah, I'm a 51.4 at 1.4 at 12,800 ISO to get a usable shutter speed, but it's fine.
Yeah, right.
You know, wow. And but so we're not going to have this discussion. We'll just simply have, well, you know, if you use this, you know, 1,000,000 ISO, you're going to have a decent shutter speed.
Yeah,
and that's the only discussion part of it. Won't be years, but you will have to sacrifice because yeah, the way we're going, maybe not.
It'll be pitch black, middle of the night, and you'll be able to shoot it with a shutter speed that will exceed the sync speed of your flash.
Exactly. I would say I always show the Nikon D4S and say 409,800 ISO, perfect for shooting pumas at night with their eyes closed on a moonless night. Yeah.
Speaking of which, loved your moon shots from.
Well, our eclipse got eclipsed.
Yes,
it
was exactly the same up here too.
So I figured, just for those not aware, I posted up a whole bunch of black photos. This is some photos I got from the previous eclipse. Stunning in their detail. Yes. Well, but it was a total eclipse. That was the moment when everything went black. It was fantastic. It was perfection. That's a right. Second either way, and there was light in those shots, Bruce. Yeah,
right.
Oh, you've got to have a laugh.
Absolutely.
I just wonder how many people took it seriously. You actually thought, oh,
Judging by the comments, I don't think anybody took it seriously.
But, you know, people who didn't comment, maybe didn't want to comment because they felt a bit stupid. Oh, I don't understand the joke.
That's possible.
Anyway.
So, coming back to Dave Clark.
Yes.
He sent me...
You haven't asked me about my week.
Oh, how was your week, mate?
I was right. So back to Dave. I did a bunch of stuff, and we'll talk about after we've talked about Dave Clark, shall we?
Right, okay.
Since it's a Taswegian takes bloody precedence over me, I'm just a filler for the episode, I understand.
So Dave sent me this email, said, "G'day Bruce, just found a good site for trivia."
Hang on a sec. What was his email saying?
"G'day Bruce." Yeah.
They call this one on this down here in Melbourne, they call this chop liver. Filler.
Just
G'day, Bruce. Yeah, right.
Just found a good site for trivia.
Because I'm a one-man show.
Good to know facts. I didn't know that type of stuff re-photography. Might be handy to bookmark for episode fillers / conversation topics, even for your personal knowledge.
Well, you can talk to yourself, Bruce.
Yeah, apparently.
I would have thought, Dave Clark, listen to this podcast for a while, you'd know it's all about me.
That's right.
Maybe it was his subtle dig.
Maybe. So anyway, I'll put the link in the show notes. There's some very interesting stuff in there.
I'm going to enjoy flicking through that. You always like to pull out some sort of kernel of esoteric knowledge about photography and workshops and stuff that nobody knows, except if anyone, it's going to be, you pull out this little bit of kernel of knowledge, you go, aha, and they go, oh, you read the website too, did you? Yeah. Oh, no, I've known this since the dawn of time. Yeah. Here she comes now.
Right.
Anyway.
Something else I saw through the week that I thought was interesting. Google has obtained a patent.
Yes,
a patent for contact lens-based cameras.
Yes.
Now, they go to lengths in the blog post to explain that all they've done is apply for a patent. There is no product ready to come out to market.
I had an idea. Let's patent it just in case it ever comes.
Pretty much.
I've had all sorts of ideas like that, Bruce, and I should have patented the lot.
But what I did pick up on in the blog post was this one paragraph, and it said, so why is this necessary at all? Because, considering we live in a time that people consider the fruition of George Orwell's 1984, one of the first things that immediately come to our heads is the concern over privacy and security. This is going to bring a bit of change there. And that got me thinking, and I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this before, Robert Sawyer, who's a Canadian author, a sci-fi author.
Yeah.
He wrote a trilogy called The Neanderthal Parallax. And the basic concept was a wormhole opened up in Canada between our world and a parallel timeline of our world.
Yes.
But in the parallel timeline, Homo sapiens didn't become the dominant race. The Neanderthals did. And they had progressed and they had technological advancements just like we have, but completely different to us. And one of the things that they had was this technology that monitored everything that every person was involved with all of the time. And there was this, government department, which was just like this massive archive that just archived everything that went on around every person, 24/7. So as a consequence, there was no crime.
Yeah.
And this made me think, we're kind of heading in that direction in a way. Like, we're going to get to the point where everything is observed 24/7.
Or even more.
Okay.
If we're talking alternate realities here. But what was that movie Tom Cruise was in there? A really bad movie Tom Cruise was in with his...
Minority Report?
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
All the technology they showed in that show, other than the psychics themselves, it was all technology that's been worked on in labs around the world as we speak.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, some of the stuff in there is quite remarkable. And, That's going to happen. We're pretty much, if you've ever seen the show, it was A Person of Interest, I think, the TV show that...
I never got to see that.
logs into TV, into every ATM camera, every webcam, every street camera, and it's amazing just how much. And look, I know that's fictional, but it's not dissimilar. You know, we'll be able to log into all this stuff and be able to watch and follow. And yeah, a couple of well-known murder cases of late where they've used a lot of this sort of footage to track and follow and eventually capture the people who are responsible. You know, it's all it's all. And as those things get better and better quality, cheaper and cheaper.
Yep.
Yeah, away we go. Yeah.
Mm. Interesting stuff.
Yes.
Anyway, the next thing I came across. Sorry, was I interrupting you?
No, that's
fine. Okay. Next thing I came across was a link on DIYphotography.net, and it was, please trash the dress responsibly.
Oh.
You need to go and have a look at the photo on this particular blog post. Have you checked this one out?
No, no. Send me the link.
The bride, it's in the.
I know. You're going to say you sent it to me.
Yeah. So the bride is standing there on the beach in her wedding dress, and the train of the dress is on fire.
Yeah, it's Photoshop.
No, it's not. And there's a guy standing there with a fire extinguisher about to blow the flames out that are racing up her back.
That's Photoshopped.
Okay. Guy writing the blog post says it's not. But anyway.
Yeah, is that? Did he shoot it?
No, he didn't. He spoke with the photographer. He's
just looking at, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. And
I thought it was worth a look.
It's Photoshopped.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'm just the more I'm looking at her.
Okay. There's a bit of a worried look on her face, though.
Yeah, but if you're faking, I mean, I've been getting my 6-year-old to do all sorts of acting for photos the last week or two, dude.
Fair enough.
It's fake.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Did you check the actual title and the link?
The title of
the blog link you sent post? No, the actual link you sent is please trash the dress responsively.
Oh, so it
is. You've got to be responsive.
But when you go to the actual blog post, the
it's
title.
Responsive.
Yeah.
I
hadn't noticed that.
Oh, that was very funny. So I've got a feeling there's a serious amount of fakery going on inside that.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Or let's put it this way. There may have been a little bit of flame, but they've added a fair whack to it.
Okay.
Yeah, especially that stuff going sideways up her dress with the flames going left instead of up.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So now flames don't tend to go left.
No.
They don't tend to go horizontal to the ground when all the other flames in the shot are going vertical to the air.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just.
You think it's been embellished.
But either way, funny shot. I'm not quite sure what it's saying about the wedding process if you'll set your bride on fire. But yeah, normally you wait until you're supposed to be married a year or so until you want to think of it. Anyway, shouldn't go there. Anyway, so what else you got?
And the last thing that I had on my list was from digitalphotographyschool.com, a collection of photos of nature's smallest creatures. And it was just a series of macro shots of different bugs and all different types of, you know, small creatures. Because there are some, there are butterflies, but there are spiders, there are grasshoppers. And just knowing how hard it is to do, good macro stuff, I thought it was an interesting collection of images. So, I just thought I'd include that one.
And what grabbed your attention the most was the one?
I like the one of the dragonfly sitting on the person's finger simply because I know how timid dragonflies are. Get a dragonfly to actually sit on a human being's finger, I thought that was pretty amazing.
I think it's called hairspray.
Right. So it's stuck there.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That's what you do in the old days. We either put them in the freezer until they freeze to death.
Right.
Catch them, freeze them, bring them out, stick them on stuff.
Oh, okay.
Always spray them with hairspray so they can't take off.
Fair enough.
You're so naive. Yeah. She's on fire. The bug's alive. What are you thinking, man?
Okay.
You think this stuff is real? Is it a great photo?
No.
Okay. No, but something. Wow, that photo's amazing. Yeah, it's probably fake.
Anyway, I liked some of the images that were there.
Yeah, well, if I've just
fake or otherwise,
the reason why I had to quickly get you, you tell me why you liked about it is because you reminded me of a group of photos I saw on Facebook today. And
right,
if you like that, Bruce, you're going to love this one because it seems to be up your fluffy little alley. Oh.
Okay.
This is 14 incredible photos that prove snails live in a magical world.
Right.
There you go. Okay. That's all for you, dude. Yeah, you sit back and you look at those, especially the last photo of the little snail holding that little fluffy thing in the air, like he doesn't get wet if it's rain. Oh, you're going to love it. Yeah. There you go. Love it.
Okay.
Anyway.
So now that you've had fun laughing at all of the stuff I contributed, what have you got?
Oh, my week. How's my week been? My week's been pretty good, thanks, actually.
What have you been up to?
I've been busy. Been busier than one-armed man in a cow milking contest.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
pretty darn busy. Let's see what I've been up to. School holidays still, so kind of, yeah.
Yep.
Still, yeah, they kind of, it was Easter. We're recording here Thursday night before Easter, and mm-hmm. Easter starts, and you know, at least I've got the rest of the family to give me support, and then they're kind of done and dusted, which is both good and bad. But let's see, I'll set some new workshop dates for the US, which is kind of good. So I'm just tying up all the stuff I'm doing for the big photo show in the US. I'm their only international speaker, so that's kind of nice.
Wow. And when is the big photo show?
It's the 16th and 17th of May at the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Uh-huh.
So come on down, say g'day, or your version of it if you're American,
yeah.
and come and have a chat.
Cool.
And I'd like to meet our two US listeners. That'd be fantastic. I'm doing 8 workshops in 5 days after the event.
Whoa! Wow.
Just to keep busy, and that's all coming along well. And looking forward to I'm on the Tamron. Tamron, I've got a big booth there. I'm doing some stuff for them, doing some talks on stage and some sort of masterclass, which will be fun. So nice. Looking forward to that. This week I've trained 25 people this week. So that was kind of a busy week.
Right.
Lots of fun training.
Was that just one workshop or was
two workshops?
Right.
Yeah. And okay. a few people even got it.
Excellent.
Yeah. I reckon looking at just under 10%, even 2. really came along well. I came up with a new workshop.
Yeah.
In my dreams in the middle of the night, I had two horrible nightmares last night.
Okay.
And between nightmare one and nightmare two, I had a idea for a new workshop. So,
right.
Lo and behold, so it was kind of worth it. So I'm building a companion workshop to my understanding your camera workshop.
Right.
And everyone always says they want more. Glenn, give us more. We want to spend more time with you, which I think is kind of odd. So what we're going to do...
Understanding your camera bag workshop.
Yeah, that's right. It's understanding this dial on your camera. Understanding your lens. That's not it. the silliest ideas sometimes, Bruce. The silliest ideas. No, it's a companion shoot day where we're just going to go for a walk through the city and put all the stuff we talked about in the workshop into practical use.
Right.
So they could fire questions, I can critique them and just pick on them generally.
Right.
And then throw in stuff that I can't talk about at that workshop because I'm overloading the information anyway, like composition and vision and lens effects and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to be a fun day, just a 4.5-hour walk around town with a nice coffee break in the middle.
Yeah, nice.
So, it's a bit of fun. Yeah, so it's kind of good.
And that will be good for those people because I know what it's like. You go along to a workshop like that,
yeah,
and you're trying to absorb what is being taught to you, but you realize that when you leave there and then go off to try and, you know, execute some of that learning on your own, you suddenly go, yeah, but how does that relate to what I'm trying to shoot now, which is different to what we were shooting in the workshop? So,
exactly. So that, you're wandering around and you want to point at something. What do you do?
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see that being very successful for you.
A lot of it's about priorities too. You know, what do you prioritize in each situation you want to shoot?
Yep.
You know, okay, I want to shoot this. What problems do I have to solve? What do I need to prioritize in my camera? As far as I always say, you always come to a fork in the road when you're out taking photos rather than pictures. So pictures are point and shoot. Photos are when you want to add an element of art. to a shot.
Right.
And you always come to a fork in the road, and the left fork is shutter speeds and the right fork is apertures.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got to prioritize. First of all, even it doesn't matter what mode you're shooting on, or if you haven't chosen the mode yet, mm-hmm. you've got to make that. You've got to make the fundamental choice first. Even if both are important, one still has precedence. Okay.
Yep.
And then let's say you're going down the shutter speed path, so you turn left, go down the path. Well, then you come to another fork in the road, fast or slow.
Yep.
Yeah. And or it might even be three. It's not a fork. It's probably a fork. They've got three tines, haven't they? Fast, slow, medium. You've got to make that decision. That's the next decision. You've made a choice. Now you're going to make a decision. And or if you get in the aperture path, small, medium, large aperture. What's going to tell the story best? It's getting into that process of decision making that helps. Which is going to tell the story best? Which is going to add drama or interest or an element of difference or change the viewpoint from the way other people see these things? Which are those? Because there's only two elements, as we know: aperture, shutter speed. But there's so many myriad of possibilities in those two.
Right.
So, it's pretty much, the day will be a lot of that. We're going to hit here. We're going to shoot this. Which path? Which path on the path?
Are you deliberately ignoring the third wheel there or what?
With ISO?
Yeah.
It's not important.
Right. Okay.
It's not important.
From an artistic point of view, it's not important. Fair enough. Yes.
It's just got to be. It's just got to be what it's got to be.
Right.
To me, that's just... It is what it is. You know what I mean? It's not actually important.
To get the shot.
Yeah, pretty much. You've got to have a creative decision based on the creative element of shutter or aperture.
Yep.
And that's the only thing that's important.
Yep.
Unless you're trying to create, let's say, minimal depth of field and long time, as an example.
Yep.
Well, they're both important. But either way, one still has precedence because if it's time, if you're trying to do long time, that probably takes precedence first. Like, how much time do I need to get the effect? Then aperture comes next. Okay, what minimal depth do I need? And then ISO will either make that work or filters or whatever it's going to be. But you've still got those two elements, the only things you ever need to work on.
Yep.
You're only going to think about two things, and ISO will be what if you have a camera of a high enough quality and it doesn't make stupid mistakes, which in other words, all cameras do, mm-hmm. you can leave the damn thing on auto ISO. Yeah?
Yeah.
get those two decisions run. Let the camera take care of the ISO if it needs to.
Yeah.
Yeah, personally, I'd rather be in control of that because I'm a control freak.
Same, yeah.
But, when I was shooting in India, nighttime shots in India, I just set the shutter speed that I was comfortable with holding.
Yep.
And an aperture I knew would get most stuff in focus and let the ISO do what it was going
to
do.
Just out of interest, does your camera, if you set it to auto ISO, will it use all of the ISO settings available?
No, it's still limited.
Yeah, exactly. Same as mine. So, yep.
You still want to say, don't go up to 125,000. You look crappy. Mm. Yeah. So you can alter it.
See, what I wish is that rather than the camera manufacturer giving me a predefined range for auto ISO, I wish they would let me have two menu options where I could say, set a minimum ISO and set a maximum ISO.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be nice. And then be able to say now work in auto ISO mode between those two thresholds.
Yeah, yeah. Which you normally can do. Normally it's lowest and highest, but the lowest you can cap the height, but not the low, because the low is kind of not that important. Because if it's low, the quality's not going to be an issue.
Yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's anyway. So that new workshop that was a bit of a revelation. So I've launched my first one of those today.
Yeah,
and I've been shooting Mist 6.5 a fair bit this week.
I noticed,
and doing all sorts of stuff. It's been kind of fun because we've been going out shopping for props and having a bit of fun together doing that.
Cool.
Yeah, we've been going out buying fruit, for photos and bits of material and baskets and we got a costume in the mail. Yeah, a little maid costume, milkmaid costume.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just been trying to, we're trying to create some schmaltz.
Right.
Yeah, we turned the schmaltz up to 11 this week.
Okay.
And just trying to get these really sort of arty, sort of painterly kind of look photos.
Yep. I love the one you had of her walking down the step beside the...
Then the old church?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool shot.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, because she's been my cohort, I should say, in these shoots for the last week, she's developing into, just during the course of this 1 week, of coming up with their ideas, coming up with poses, coming up with this is what people would do. We've been talking a lot about the process of acting whilst being photographed.
Right.
Yeah, as far as, you know, what sort of facial expressions and minimal, what comes through your eyes, what sort of connection, what would you do in this situation, and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And she's just been going with it. I'll do some set stuff first that I envision, and then I give her free rein, and she just bang, she nails it every time, does some amazing stuff. It's great to watch.
Wow.
Yeah. As far as for her character as a person, it's really an interesting. Yeah, thing to watch somebody do something you've never seen them do before.
Yeah, right.
When you're emotionally connected to that subject, it's so we've done a whole bunch. But I had today's shoot was the shoot that almost wasn't shot.
Right.
Yeah, after I decided I'm wanting to do this shot. I bought this lovely old straw broom, and I'm going to do this shot in this old abandoned house. Well, not I was in an old wall, right. But with a floor. The hard part's being the floor. I've got plenty of houses, not many floors.
Oh, okay.
And some with not many ceilings. But yeah, so I thought of this one place. I thought, we'll head for it for tonight's shoot. We get down there, and all these trees have grown in the inside of it. So it's kind of no good for that. It's cool, but different shoot. You know?
Yep.
So that was no good. So light was fading. It's now 3:30 in the afternoon, and sun setting at 5:30 or so.
Yep.
Going, what am I going to do? So I came up with this idea for this. There's this ford across a river, not far from there. So
right.
We drove down there, and the water was flowing lovely, and there's a nice little bit of sunlight on it. It was kind of cool. So I thought, well, if I get her in the water, just up to her mid calf, and she can be doing washing the laundry. And so we got out of the car. And I dressed her, and socks and shoes. I also had to carry her down this muddy road into the river, back up, grabbed all my gear, back down there, set up the off-camera flashes, the whole thing, got my camera gear out, got in a position, turned the camera on, flat battery. Only battery with me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 35-minute drive from home.
Oh.
And here's the thing, I checked before I left home. I turned the camera on to make sure there's a memory card in, there's a reasonable amount of photos. I didn't check how much battery life there was. I had to walk away from the child for a few minutes and mutter a few unmutterables,
yeah.
Kick a few rocks, and just generally feel like throwing the whole camera and caboodle into the river. So then we had to make the choice as light was fading. Do we do the hour and 10 round trip and do it again? So we did. So we bolted home.
Wow.
Grabbed a battery, bolted back down there, got all down there, set it all up. But the great thing is that the funny thing is about that extra hour, the light went to magical.
Yeah, you know, right.
It was that little bit later in the day, the light was just shining down the river, through the trees, through the long grass, and it was a pretty cool sort of 10 or 15 minutes.
Nice.
And halted by cars wanting to drive through the ford. Yeah. very inconvenient. How dare they? And, that was a fun. But again, you'd think I'd learn. Yeah. Last week, was it? Yeah. Got to a shoot location, no memory card. This week, dead battery. You know, after 36 years of doing this, you'd think you'd have a clue.
Yeah.
You do the old vesticles, testicles, wallet, and watch, and make sure everything was right before you left.
Yeah.
But no, silly bugger. But we got there. The day was okay. We were saved. And then an interesting thing happened the other day while shooting. I don't even know we were out for a drive in the country, me and the kiddo, the other day, and I put him in an old, fence, old abandoned house and put him in that. But coming out of the house, I put him in the car, turn, saw the camera over my shoulder. I turn and look at my camera, and it's dangling loose from the bottom of the strap.
Ooh.
just on the safety cable.
Oh.
So it had the camera had fallen off.
Wow.
With my brand new, just returned 24-70, just dangling about a foot or so off the ground. So I took a photo of it and sent it to the importers of the strap and said, you just saved me. Because they also happen to import the lenses I'm sponsored by.
Oh.
So one product saved the other, you know.
Nice.
But after they've just have to, they've just repaired, $1,000-odd with the repairs on two lenses that fell off the, I won't mention the name, R-straps.
Right.
And smashed, yeah. I still haven't got my camera repair. I've got one dead camera, had two dead lenses from these straps.
Wow.
So I finally gave up, and I've gone to the Joby Pro straps.
Right.
And in all honesty, they're not as good a strap.
Okay.
Yeah, the R strap is a more, it's not more comfortable, but when you're pulling the camera to your eye, it's a better strap.
Right.
Because the Joby one has this, the strap kind of sticks out a little bit too far towards your mouth and nose when you've got the camera. It kind of gets a little bit in the way. It gets a little bit in the way.
Yep.
But that safety strap, saving
worth
grace.
Worth its weight in gold.
Worth its weight in cocky poo, yeah. it saved them and, a good $500 or $600 a repair of the lens and probably saved me another camera.
Yeah, right.
So I took a photo on the side of the road, sent it to the product manager whilst I'm on the side of the road. By the time I got in the car, he goes, product was made for you, Glenn. Because he's had to repair so much of my stuff over the years, which is funny. So, well, not funny for them. Not funny for me when it happens, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then I went into, I got this, I'm not sure if we talked about this last week. I think I was going to this shoot with Charlie Bamford in an old mill.
Okay.
Had I done that shoot yet, or was I going to?
Yeah, this was with the female model.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the photos. I don't know if we actually got around to talking about the shoot.
Yeah, I said I was going to go do it, and no, it was great. Yeah, Charlie just organised this modelling. He's flown down from interstate for some reason, just for his own pleasure.
Oh, he did, right.
Yeah, and he just wanted me to come along to hang out for an hour or so, which was kind of cool.
Okay. Sorry. Cool.
And so we went into this old abandoned mill, and we got there, and it was one of those great examples, again, of you're in this awesome location.
Yeah.
And this place is amazing. I mean, the ceiling inside this building would have been, 60, 80 feet high.
Nice.
Yeah. And with massive machinery in it and, little tiny walkways all the way up it and stuff. So it's full of massive machinery, graffiti and broken down, rusty stuff everywhere. So it's kind of a dream place for us as photographers. But then you're in this amazing place, and how in the hell do you shoot it to make it look good?
Okay.
Because it's one of those things that, yes, it was really kind of cool to look at, but really hard to shoot.
Okay.
Just, what story are you trying to tell? What angle actually makes the place look interesting? It doesn't have other crud in it that takes away from it, or has just empty spaces, or, it's such a massive place, it's very hard to tell a story well. So it took me, I don't know, I was there about an hour and a half with Charlie and Stephanie.
Yeah.
For about three shots.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't mean three actual actuations, but three setups.
Right.
Yeah. And realistically, there was only two because one of them kind of sucked. for two setups. But the two shots were really good.
Yeah.
I liked what I got, but it was hard work to get it.
Right.
Sometimes, what it's like? I say this all the time, we get carried away by locations and not the shot that's necessary to make that thing all work. Yeah, it's fine to be in a great location, but can you shoot it well?
Right.
Can you do it justice? Can you tell the story of the place well in a single frame? Not easy to do,
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun, except I'm just packing up my gear, and all of a sudden there's this smash right behind me, and I got showered with broken glass. And some idiot kids had run out the front, had been threw a rock at the window, in the second floor window, right behind my head and smashed. And a second earlier, I was facing the other way, looking up.
Whoa.
And smashed all over my shoulders, all over, into my hair.
Wow.
And Charlie, who's about half my height, bolted down the stairs going, "Oi!" Got it. There's like 12 teenagers there.
Oh, jeez.
Now I'm six two, so he's like 3'6". No, he's 5'1". He's the size of my mum, about 5'1", 5'4", something like that. But
right.
not overly endowed with height.
Yeah.
And so he's running out there going, "Oi!" And amazingly, all these 12 teenagers ran away from him. It was just fantastic. And I got out about a minute or so behind. I had to get the glass off me. Got out after him just because I didn't want him putting himself in danger.
Yeah.
And see these kids, they all sort of sheepishly came back and, "Oh, sorry, we didn't know anyone was in there. What were you doing?" And a couple of them had cameras and stuff, and they're just being kids. I said, so I had to point out, "Look, guys, you've obviously got cameras.
Yeah.
You obviously enjoy photographing and these cool places.
Yeah.
So don't ruin it any more than it already is,
Yeah.
Don't make it get into a position where it's so run down, it's no good to shoot anymore. Let nature do that naturally. Don't if you're going to be a photographer, you record, you don't destroy and then record it,
Yeah.
So that, and they were pretty good, and they were even, you know, they're all about, you know, 13, 14 years old.
Right.
So when they heard we had a semi-nude model in the building, they were quite keen to check the place out. Enough, you know. They were more keen than seeing the machinery now rather than destroying it, which was kind of a laugh. So I had a good week of shoots. I've been feeling quite creative, which is good.
Cool.
Not something I've been able to do for a long time. I haven't been out taking anything just for the fun of taking photos, as opposed to for the work of taking photos, which is very, very different. So that's been a great bit of fun.
Yep.
And I did launch another workshop. So many people were keen on this vintage style stuff I've been doing that I'm actually running a shoot and then post-processing workshop, so people can sort of, you know, do the whole thing. You know? So get a few people on that can do that and have some fun.
Cool.
And then I've got a lovely surprise from the missus this week.
Oh, yeah.
And also, she got me a book. right. No, she. I came home. There's a book waiting for me, and it's a David Duchemin book.
Nice.
Yeah, called Vision and Voice.
Cool.
It's basically about the art of vision using Lightroom.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So building upon your shooting vision with your post processing vision.
Right.
So, you know, I haven't a long look through it yet, because it has been a busy week with babies, you know, childcare. Yep. Not Richard Clark, if you're listening, sorry, being a parent. His missus told me off, and it's not daddy daycare, it's called parenting. I love it. So it's been a busy week parenting. But there was the first chapter, he addresses a great issue that I thought I'd just read bits of it for you.
Yeah.
So he's doing a lecture at the Himalaya Club in India.
Right.
And it came to question and answer time, and there was this loaded question from a guy in the audience saying, and it was a fairly, by the way, I read in between the lines, it was a fairly confrontationally asked, like, so,
yep.
Do you do any post-processing on your images? Yeah, that kind of,
yeah,
I'll get you out. And then the guy goes, so how do I know it really looked like that if you did? Yeah. And he goes, apparently it went all downhill from there. but it brought him to the concept of really refining the thought process behind vision, which is always a good thing. Yeah. I always say being thrown at problems and being confronted with stuff often gives you great new paths and new avenues. So this is good. So his answer to this guy was, of course you don't know that it looked like that. Simultaneously, he's also saying, trust me. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what it looked like. And in some ways, the answer is always, and I love this bit, it didn't. Because no scene looks like any photo. Now, we're always told the camera never lies. Well, every single photograph is a lie. If nothing else, just in composition or angle of view or depth of field, or shutter speed that was used. They're all a lie. Yeah, we never see blurred stuff in the world. We don't see out-of-focus backgrounds in the world.
No.
So that's altering reality. It might be a subtle, not like we're adding a tree that wasn't there or something, but we are. It is the camera is lying because it's stopping your eye traveling the distance it would normally do in the viewpoint. The camera is lying by not giving the same 180-degree angle of view that you would normally have.
Yep.
The camera is lying by freezing something.
Yep.
Yeah, so the camera's always lying. So the whole concept of the camera never lies, he says that we've grown up being fed the lie that any manipulation is a corruption of the image. And it's not, because it's all manipulation. It's all a viewpoint. It's a view. And so he says, so how do I know it looked like that? His answer is, you don't. The best I can do as a photographer is get you to trust me to show you what it looked like to me, how I saw it. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the best descriptions of your photos are only good because you do post-processing. Well, no, it's part of the vision. Yeah, half the shots I've done this week were with a post-process in mind.
Yep.
Because, funnily enough, my walls don't look like Renaissance walls. my daughter tends not to, very often, walk around wearing an old maid's outfit.
Yes.
Often. Yeah. Now she's got one. She'll be doing dishes and stuff more with it, of course. But you know what I mean? Everything, that we get so focused on, straight out of camera,
Yep.
Maybe it should be straight out of computer. It's still SOOC. It's still the same acronym. But yeah, everything's a manipulation. And I was trying to say, you got to do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do what makes you happy. And if you don't like to post, don't post.
Mm-hmm.
But almost every photo can be improved by post.
Yeah.
You know, it can be enhanced. It can be given more gravitas if you want. Yeah. So, you know, if it's listeners out there who are sort of either too scared to try because they don't really know how, well, just get in there and put your feet in the water,
yep.
Paddle around a bit and see what happens.
Definitely.
You know, see what it does. You know, YouTube's an amazing resource of absolute garbage.
Yes.
And some good stuff. But if you can pick up just one or two tips from a garbage video that you're never going to do anything like that, well, you learn a little time. That's how I learned how to post process, and I'm crap at it, I must admit. But I learned to post process just by putting my feet in the water and splashing.
Yeah.
And see what happened. I know I'll never be any good at post-processing because I'll never put the time in to learn.
Right.
You know, I'll never put that effort in to get good at it. You know, because my idea of post-processing is using my laptop, my finger on the trackball whilst watching TV on the couch at night. You know, that's never going to win any awards.
Right.
But I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy enough. I want to be. Everyone wants to be better at everything we do. But
yeah.
I'm happy enough. You know. Then I saw by sheer chance, I just finished reading that little David Duchemin thing. I went onto the computer and this quote came to me straight away, almost like the first thing I opened. It was a John Lennon quote and it was, "Reality leaves a lot to the imagination."
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is true. Yeah. As a photographer, we want more. Yeah, we can't be in amazing places every day of the week. We want to be involved in our passion all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. And then another one came up. I don't know who this is attributed to, but the rational and serious are empty playgrounds for the muse.
The rational and serious
are empty playgrounds for the muse. So if your brain is everything's very rational and very serious and very rigid and that's not a place for airy fairy thinking and thoughts and visions and ideas and flow.
No,
that's not where your brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the rational and serious, I'd rather be a little bit the way I am, and hopefully get inspiration from time to time, than be trying to rationally learn everything and get all the book smarts, but not have any of that vision.
Yeah, you know? Fair enough.
So, and then he finishes off with discovering what an image doesn't want to look like is part of discovering what it does want to look like.
Ooh, okay.
Now that is so. And this struck home to me, and I've been saying this for a while, and I've always felt a bit kind of sheepish saying it. But when I'm post-processing photographs, the image leads me to the post-processing effects I'm going to do. I don't necessarily – sometimes when I'm shooting, I'll have an idea, a la my kids.
Yep.
But when I'm actually doing the processing, it's all intuition. It's not, I'm going to do this and then I'll do that and I'll do this. And that's why there's no two images exactly the same. Even in the series, and let's face it, Bruce,
yep.
They were a series of images.
Yep.
Did. I thought it was kind of funny to do a series of photos because after our discussion last week.
Yep.
The image itself will speak to me about whether it needs to go this way or that way, whether this needs to be done. I follow, and that is that your muse, is that your subconscious, artistic, creative, whatever. But it's interesting to follow. And as I said, about dabbling your feet, just get in there and just maybe follow your intuition a little bit. You know, learn what the buttons do. A YouTube video will teach you that. And then just follow your feel. What's the worst going to happen? If you're working on not your, you make a duplicate file, just work on that one. And all you can do is destroy a copy. You start again. Yeah. What's the end of the world with that? You know, it doesn't hurt to absolutely kill a photo dead and then go back and start again if you have to, you know. But you've learned stuff along the way.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the beauty of the digital era is, you know, it's not like we're churning through paper and chemicals and stuff like that. It's all just, you know.
I mean, your camera does have a finite amount of actuations, about shots.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I meant about the processing in your computer, you know. It's just, Yeah, we're manipulating electrons and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, your computer's only going to last 2 or 3 years at best anyway, so you might as well use it a lot in those 2 or 3 years.
Absolutely.
That's my theory. Just a couple of more little things, just a couple, if that's all right. Now, yeah. Stop talking about myself for a while.
Yeah.
I came across this thing about that may be the end of batteries. Well, end of battery issues, end of batteries running out.
Yeah, just having a read of this. This is very interesting.
What's amazing is where this technology came from. This is a whole new style of battery made from
research into Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, from Alzheimer's disease in Tel Aviv has led them to this new style of battery, which is called a bio-organic battery. I don't know what bio – yeah, using nanocrystal technology. Yeah, I don't know what any of that means.
No.
But – they've demonstrated a working battery that charges in under 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And then can then charge a mobile phone, which will then run for 2 or 3 hours from that.
Yeah.
So and they're saying within a year, they should be able to make these batteries small enough to go in smartphones.
Yeah. And then you combine that with, you know, the power mat technology where you don't actually have to plug in. You just put it down on a surface that is designed to charge these devices. It'll get to the point where it won't matter where you put your phone down. It'll just be charging continuously.
Well, Nikola Tesla,
yeah.
the founder of our electronic world, invented wireless electricity back in the 1860s.
Yes.
So you could be walking around, everything would be charging all the time. In fact, you wouldn't need a battery. Just tap into – I never thought of it. We wouldn't need a single battery product.
No.
Because you just tap into the wireless electricity that's flying. I mean, I don't think they discovered the effects of high voltage electricity and cancer back in the 1860s. It's always been a bit of a thought. If you've got all this voltage flying through the air, is it really good for you, you know? But there's so much stuff in the air these days. Who knows? Yeah, it's not going to help you out anyway. But if in a year's time we can get batteries that, you know, we can plug in and charge in a minute, for 2 or 3 hours, that's just gonna be remarkable.
Well, they said that the batteries could be commercially available in 3 years. So
yeah, which is still no time at all. You know,
absolutely.
Both you and I are getting older.
Yeah,
and every year's flying by now. So three years I feel like 3 months as a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And then the lovely Carl Hemming sent me he didn't send it to you, Bruce, he sent it to me.
Right.
he sent a link to a Scott Kelby interview.
Oh, okay.
And look, I'm not the biggest fan of Scott Kelby. Okay. You know? Yeah. Not a big fan.
Right.
But, and this video was 22 minutes long.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I sort of put it off, and he goes, "Look, Glenn, you've only got to watch the 10 to 15 minute period. You know, that's where it's going to hit home for you. You'll love this bit." And I was busy doing some stuff. I was like, "All right, I'm going to stop," because he asked me, "Have you seen it? Have you seen it?" And I admit I hadn't. So I jumped on and watched it, and I loved it. You know?
Okay.
And Carl said to me, "Because this had him crying whilst he watched it."
Right.
And this apparently had lots of people. I've read stuff, and then lots of people crying whilst they watch it. And I've got to say, it was an incredibly emotive period of 5 minutes, and I highly recommend everyone go and watch it. But what struck home, why Carl sent it to me, is because Scott obviously is a photographic teacher, and I'm a photographic teacher, Bruce.
Right. And, I never would have guessed.
And it was talking about his motivation about why he teaches.
Right.
And why he does what he does.
Yeah.
And at one point he breaks down crying.
Right.
And it's and Scott Kelby, that is not Carl. But it's about because he used to be a musician. I won't spoil it. I'd really recommend it.
Okay.
If you want to see why some people are worth going to learn from and others aren't, it's that kind of passion.
Right.
Now, I may feel sometimes he's a bit selling people short with the way he teaches them. He doesn't empower them enough.
Okay.
Just because he does like to teach to shoot in auto a lot, and I'm a sort of kind of a get, you know, fine with that when it's suitable, but not, it's not always suitable. No. You know, I'd rather empower people to be able to shoot manual as well. And he doesn't do a lot of that in a lot of the stuff I've seen of his.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of, we'll shoot in auto and guess with exposure compensation.
Ooh, nice.
And that's, yeah, exactly. And that's just, yeah. And that's, as I say to people when we talk about this in workshops, I can't teach you experience.
No.
I can teach you how something works. I can show you how it works, and we can do it together as you see how it works, but something like exposure compensation. I can show you how it works, but the experience required to consistently, quickly get your exposure right using that, or know when to override what the camera's going to do and what mistakes it's going to make, that's not a quick journey.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But manual and correct metering is, because that's watching a dotted line move towards a point.
Yeah.
We can all do that, you know. And then the simplicity of how manual doesn't get confused once you've got that exposure, right? You can move around and nothing changes where auto does.
Yes.
And once again, that's a hard leap for people to take. Manual is the easiest mode on a camera to use. People just have to learn how to use it.
Yep.
And auto, to me, is always the hardest mode to use.
Maybe not necessarily the easiest, but it's certainly the most predictable.
No, it's the easiest.
Okay.
Because once you've said it, you forget it. It doesn't take – how long does it take to learn how to spin a dial to a dot gets in the middle of it? The actual principle of learning how manual works is easy. Once – it takes a bit more to make the breakthrough to grasp what we're talking about.
Yep.
To grasp how easy it is, to grasp how it doesn't get confused. But once you've made that connection, your photography is much easier and your consistency is huge. Where there's no consistency in auto or any of the semi-autos, there's no consistency.
Yep.
Yeah, and so if you want consistently good photos, you have to and what I mean consistent, I don't necessarily mean from shoot to shoot. I mean during that one shoot.
Yeah.
As you move three steps here and two steps there and go a bit lower there and all that sort of stuff, there's consistency in manual that isn't there in auto.
Yeah.
And that to me is, you've got to empower people. And he doesn't do a lot of that, certainly from the stuff I haven't seen. But this has given me a whole new respect for him as a teacher for the why he does what he does. Because, I feel the same way.
Right.
I haven't had the experience that Scott's had that's made him feel that way. It's just who I am, as a person. I'd love you to go watch it and maybe we can talk about it next week because I think it's a wonderful. Okay. You don't get a lot of honesty in this industry. There's a lot of crap. Yeah, there's a lot of just typical male dominated rubbish. but when you see someone who just comes out and is brutally honest and genuine, it's just kind of cool. So Carl, I thank you. It was wonderful.
Right.
And the last thing I want to talk about, and I won't talk about it, I'll just send you the link and we can put it up there.
Yeah.
This is for all the working photographers out there, pro, semi-pro, occasional pro, Uncle Larry's got a camera, let's get him. And it's an article on why photographers can't work for free.
Yep.
And basically it's written as a letter to those people who are asking. The organizations and all sort of stuff. And basically, if you get asked to do something and they arc up because you said no, you refer them to this page and this website. And if they read it, they'll kind of start to get it.
Yeah.
And one of the most salient points is, and you get a lot of this from charities and all these foundations who want you to go do an event for them.
Yep.
And one of the most salient points is, do you realize I'm the only one working here tonight who's not getting paid? Because the guy who's asking, this is often the case, the people who are asking you to do all this stuff, they're all being paid.
Yeah.
But there's no money for you.
Yeah.
Not even to cover your expenses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've sent the link through to you. We can send that out to, put that up. And if anyone wants to have a flick through that, it's got some good points. So
cool.
That's it, my friend. We've come to an impasse. It's our Easter break.
It is.
Coming up. Yeah.
Yep.
Which means nothing to anyone because by the time Easter's over, we'll be recording again.
That's right.
But for those who celebrate it, I wish you well.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
And those who don't, have a nice break.
Yes. Yes. And please be safe on the roads.
And in the words of Monty Python, line on the left, one cross each.
All right, mate. You have a good break.
Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you next week.
We will. See ya.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.